So tonight I'm going to talk about this system known as spiritual psychology. Sometimes it's also known as transpersonal psychology. And there are many iterations of this, but I was particularly intrigued to find this list of 21 principles. And I don't think this is representative of all of transpersonal psychology, but at least one school has these 21 principles. And I thought these were fascinating, and so I'm going to talk about these 21 principles of spiritual psychology. I have to look at them to remember all of them. And I will have a handout on which I'll list all of these, but right now you can just listen to them and take them in. Principle number one, we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. And so this one is almost a little bit of a cliche. This one certainly is one that I've heard used and even overused in New Age circles. And as with many cliches, there's something deep behind it if we drop into it. In many ways, this is pointing to this idea that is present in the wisdom tradition that our life as we know it here is not the whole of our existence. That we might have had many lives before, that there were certain, between the lives, there are sort of higher soul states where we're actually making choices about the coming incarnation. And it's a very funny thing about this human life that we have this kind of amnesia, that we don't actually have particularly clear memories of the last life or the in-between periods. You know, if we just go up into our heads, we can say, well, you know, I don't know anything except this life from birth to death. And it really casts everything about our existence in a very different perspective if we think of it with this much longer perspective. So that, in many ways, provides kind of the frame for the other principles that follow. The second principle, number two, the nature of the universe is love. This is very closely related to the Christian statement, God is love. And in some sense, this is an anti-intuitive idea because life is hard. Life is difficult. We don't always get what we want. Sometimes we get what we don't want, you know? At least when I look back at the pattern of my life, it's clear to me, well, a few things are clear to me. First of all, even the times when I got things that I thought I really wanted, sometimes it turned out I didn't really want them. Sometimes it turned out that they were things that I regretted in retrospect, you know. And when I think about the times that I didn't get what I want and got what I didn't want, sometimes in retrospect I look back and thought, well, wow, that was actually much better for me. You know, it turns out that our wanting is not always a particularly good guide about what's actually going to make us happy, what's actually going to be good for us. You know, it's very, very funny. And yet each new time, we're so fixated on, I want to get what I want, you know? We're very funny that way. Part of this view that the nature of the universe is love is this trust that we're being cared for, that there's this pattern of meaning behind the events that happen to us. And so it may not be what I want, it may not fit in with the plan that I have in my head or my own agenda, but what is happening is actually unfolding in a way to allow me to enter more into healing and really to cultivate the soul lessons that I'm working on in this life. In many ways, from this perspective, our core wounding, each one of us has some kind of core wounding, that's our soul lesson in life. That's the thing that we're struggling with over and over again, decade after decade, trying to get a little better, trying to make a little more progress. That's the thing we're working on in this life. And from this larger perspective, at least the wisdom traditions would say that at a soul level, we made the choices before this incarnation so that when we entered this incarnation, we'd have the kinds of difficulties or the kinds of wounds that would constellate those particular wounds so that we'd be working on the thing we needed to work on. You know, and so from this larger perspective, that's exactly what I should be working on. And life is very generous to create the conditions that allows me to work on it. Again, it doesn't accord with the rational mind, because the rational mind wants its own way, and it's not interested in anyone else's plan or the universe having a bigger plan or anything like that. Principle number 3. Our natural human state is love. And this is really one that more and more neurobiological research is just making this abundantly clear. We are designed for connection. We are designed for love and connection. We thrive under conditions of love and connection. In conditions of love and connection, they're healthy for us. All our gifts come out, our strengths come out. We are designed to be connected to one another. And that is, you know, it's very clear from a scientific perspective, but it's also echoing all these traditions from the wisdom traditions, all the, you know, love thy neighbor as thyself and all this. The fourth principle, all of life is for learning. And this, again, is part of this pattern that the things that are happening to me, it's not because somebody out there has an agenda against me or anything like that. Each thing that happens to me, there's a teaching I need to apprehend there. It may or may not be like a head thing that I can figure out, but there's some lived experience that I need to integrate in order to advance as a soul. The next three kind of go together. Number 5, an unresolved issue is anything that disturbs your peace. Number 6, all upset points to unresolved issues. Number 7, unresolved issues are not bad, but rather opportunities for spiritual growth. So again, much of this talks about our core wounding. And really, from the point of view of not spiritual psychology, just ordinary psychology, if there's anything that really gets me worked up and pushes my buttons, it's probably because there's some way that I'm not at peace with myself. You know, if it's that person at work and I just can't stand that person, or this thing going on in society, or this political thing, and it just gets under my skin and gets me all worked up, there's probably a way that I'm not at peace with myself. And quite likely, there's some kind of early childhood thing that needs healing, that needs attention. And in many ways, I mean, the universe is again, very compassionate. When we have something like this that needs healing, we get triggered again and again because it's the universe's way of forcing us to pay attention to what needs healing. Number 8, nothing outside of you causes your disturbances. That's a deep one. That one really points to a kind of radical self-responsibility. You know, and it's so different from the mind. It's so different from the strategic mind. The strategic mind loves to create blame states, love to create victim narratives. It's not my fault. That person did blah, blah, blah to me, you know. We so like to point outside and locate responsibility outside of ourselves. And really, when we're doing that, we're giving our power away. If I say somebody else made me feel that way, I'm saying they're the agent in my life, not me. You know? And there's actually incredible power that comes from renouncing victim stories, from renouncing blame states, and really taking full responsibility. If that person triggers me, that means I have something to work on. Doesn't mean anything, you know, that person, doesn't matter whether they change or not, I have something to work on. Similarly, number 9, you are completely responsible for your experiences in life. And again, this is the radical self-responsibility piece of this. And it's a hard one to embrace because, again, we all have this memory of childhood. We all have this memory of this time when life was so good and I didn't have to be responsible for anything and I just threw temper tantrums and got my needs met, you know, and stuff like this. And there's something very appealing about that state, you know, and it's very human. And so it runs against all those intuitions to take deep responsibility for my own experience. Number 10 kind of repeats sort of, some of these are a little repetitive. Number 10, the physical world reality exists for spiritual growth. So this is sort of recapping a lot of the other stuff, that the whole point of this life from this perspective is your soul having the experiences it needs to grow. Number 11 is a particularly powerful one. Spirit meets you at your point of action. Once again, spirit meets you at your point of action. That one is powerful, and it really points to the fact that when I have plans and fantasies in my head, oh yeah, I'm going to do blah, blah, blah someday, and I can even tell my friends, yeah, someday I'm going to do blah, 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 all that is worth nothing. What really changes life is the moment that I take action and set foot on a new path. There's something very powerful in action. And that power, you know, we imagine that when we're making plans and spinning our wheels up here that we're doing something, we're really not doing anything. We're really not doing anything until we actually take the first concrete step. And it's powerful the way once we start taking the concrete steps, the way that doors start to open, possibilities start to unfold that we simply could not imagine when we were just spinning in our own heads. Number 12, very simple, what you believe determines your experience. Very simple. And so it can often be a wonderful exercise, you know, if there's a part of your experience where you're manifesting something that you don't like or you don't want to be manifesting. What role are you doing in attracting that? How are you attracting that? What kind of self-belief is magnetizing people to treat you that way or those kinds of outcomes to come to you again and again? You know, it's a very, very challenging perspective because, again, very easy to go into the narratives, well, this person did something wrong, and then this person did the same thing, and this person did the same thing, you know? Well, if they're all doing the same thing to me, what is the way that I might be asking for it, you know? It's a very challenging question. Number 14. Oh, wait. Number 13. Similarly, your future is created based on how you respond to current experiences. I mean, that's just like karma 101 there. Number 14, the issue isn't the issue. The real issue is how you are with yourself as you go through the issue. And so the mind loves drama. It loves to create, well, this person said this, and this, that, and that, and this is what I mean, blah, blah, blah. The mind attaches to drama. That's not the point. You know, and the mind thinks that it can play all these scenarios and somehow come to a solution. The mind does not provide the answer to these difficult problems in life. What's important is, do we remain connected to ourselves? Are we connected to our heart? Are we connected to our authenticity? Can we remain centered as we move through whatever challenge? That's really the most important. Number 15, very touching. Healing is the application of loving to the places inside that hurt. An incredibly simple statement of a very powerful truth. I think it's an idea from the Sufi tradition that all of spiritual unfolding is just summarized in the phrase, love yourself. That all healing, all spiritual advancement is just about loving. And of course, the paradox of this is that the places in us that get wounded, the early childhood experiences, well, say in early childhood, I had some sort of experience where I felt rejected or I felt, worthless or something like this. Well, then that place gets wounded and that place starts broadcasting some kind of message like, you're worthless or you should be rejected or you don't belong or, whatever toxic message it has. That place is basically a wounded child asking for attention the only way it knows how to ask for attention. And in my experience, time and time again, to love those places, to really accept them and love them, you have to feel whatever core emotion is there, allow it to pass, allow it to release, but then it relaxes into love. We're really made of love through and through. Sixteen is powerful, I find. Every time an individual resolves a single issue, all of humanity moves forward in its evolution. And what's powerful about that to me is it can feel like spiritual work is such a private thing. It can feel like it's such a, like, I'm just having this thing, and even if I have a breakthrough, unless, if I don't tell anybody, who's even going to know about the breakthrough I have? That kind of thing. And yet this casts it in this profound, puts this profound responsibility on me that if I'm doing my spiritual work, even if I don't understand it, I'm having an effect on everyone else. And that, and similarly, days that I'm, wrapped up in myself in some kind of, self-blame or disconnection or something like that. I can have this story. Well, this is my own little trip, doesn't affect anyone else if I feel miserable. But even when we have that, we're dragging everyone else down, There's an image from one of the sutras. The Buddha said that the world is like the net of Indra. The net of Indra, imagine a giant fishing net. In each place where two strings intersect, there's a diamond. And each diamond reflects the whole of the net. And so if there's a problem, a tangle or a tear in any part of the net, it's reflected everywhere else in the net. And that's really our experience. We are so energetically entwined. We are entwined at all kinds of spiritual levels. And so any movement that any one of us makes sends out ripples to everyone else. And so we all have so much responsibility to do the work to the best of our ability, to really do everything we can, because as I heal myself, I'm healing the world. Seventeen is kind of an odd one. Spiritual growth is a process, not an event. And I think that probably is kind of obvious to most of us that it's not like a one-time thing. But there's this funny thing. Again, we're mammals. And one very satisfying mammalian experience we have, we all have it, when you have a big job and you get done with your job and you're satisfied. And that just that moment of, wow, that work is done, that felt good, I can rest now. I mean, that's a universal experience. We all have that experience with manual tasks. Hopefully we have it now and again at work. And there's a way that part of a mammalian brain wants to have that experience with spiritual life. Like, wants to get to a place where I can say, okay, I'm done. You know? And of course, there is no done. We're always growing. You know? So it's a very funny way that the illusions of the mammalian brain can present some problems for us. Number 18, direct experience is how belief is turned into knowing. And it's so true at every level. What we think doesn't count for much. What we've actually lived, that's what matters. That's what changes us ultimately, what we actually live through. You can't really think your way into profound change, but through experiences you can live and live through a profound change. Number 19, very straightforward. Judgment is self-condemnation. Self-forgiveness is freedom. Really nothing else even has to be said about that. Judgment is self-condemnation. Self-forgiveness is freedom. Number 20 kind of sums up a lot of these other points. Your human experience on earth is your school. Your primary goal is to accept and master the lessons from this school. So again, sums up many of these other perspectives we've had. And then number 21, the last one, a life filled with acceptance is a life free of unnecessary emotional suffering. So at this point, I'll hand out the quote sheet. And so I have the 21 principles listed as well as a bunch of quotes. So the first quote is from Mr. Buddha. Do not give your attention to what others do or fail to do. Give it to what you do or fail to do. Very straightforward. And then along those same lines, Confucius, attack the evil that is within yourself rather than attacking the evil that is in others. Both of them quotes a tremendous self-responsibility. This long quote from the polymath and author, Goethe. Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always an effectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans. That the moment one definitively commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help that one that never otherwise would have occurred. A whole stream of events issues from that decision, raising one's favor, all manner of unforeseen incidents, meetings, and material assistance, which no man could have dreamed would have come his way. Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Begin it now. Very powerful. This humorous one from Teddy Roosevelt. If you could kick the person in the pants responsible for most of your trouble, you wouldn't sit for a month. From Gandhi. Manliness consists not in bluff, bravado, or loneliness. It consists in the daring to do the right thing and facing the consequences, whether it is in matters social, political, or other. It consists in deeds, not words. from Eleanor Roosevelt. Remember always that you not only have the right to be an individual, you have the obligation to be one. That one is great. From the civil rights worker and Congressman John Lewis, very simply, if not us, then who? If not now, then when? Very powerful. Jack Kornfield, in the end, these things matter most. How well did you love? How fully did you live? How deeply did you let go? Imagine you knew that at the end of your life, those were the only three things you were going to be evaluated on. How would you live your life? From Barbara DeAngelis, living with integrity means not settling for less than what you know you deserve in relationships, asking for what you want and need from others, speaking your truth even though it might create conflict or tension, behaving in ways that are in harmony with your personal values, making choices on what you believe, not what others believe. From the Zen teacher Sharon Salzberg, taking responsibility for oneself is by definition an act of kindness. From the psychologist Jordan Peterson, people create their worlds with the tools they have directly at hand. Faulty tools produce faulty results. Repeated use of the same faulty tools produces the same faulty results. It is in this manner that those who fail to learn from the past doom themselves to repeat it. It's partly fate, it's partly inability, it's partly unwillingness to learn, refusal to learn, motivated refusal to learn. Turned out to be a very good question. Why do some people learn and some people refuse to learn? So it's not an easy question. Steve Maraboli says, the victim mindset dilutes human potential. By not accepting personal responsibility for our circumstances, we greatly reduce our power to change them. Dr. Sarani Saranakra, I don't know much about her. She says, never be prompt to criticize. Never speak before you reflect, and never, ever be afraid to struggle for what you want in life. Amy Mercury says, the secret ingredients to true happiness, decisive optimism, and personal responsibility. Very simple. That's kind of a magic formula there. From Jacob Norby, among the greatest tragedies is a person who believes they aren't meant to win. By winning, I mean find their purpose, passion, and joy in life. They believe other people have some better DNA or happiness genes or something, and that they themselves are missing a critical chromosome. That is a lie, and it is begging to be unbelieved. For the moment we know the truth about ourselves, we can take both responsibility for our own lives and inspired action to create exactly the life which is our birthright. In other words, you were meant to win. And finally, very simply from Kelly Robinson, all the barriers are on my side.